Hello, and welcome to the 2012 Integrated Marketing Virtual Conference. I'm Thorne McGee, Editor-in-Chief of Target Marketing, and I'm pleased to welcome you to our final session of this great day of webinar and events. If you've been with us all day, you've heard about the big picture of integrated marketing, cutting-edge analytics, creative strategies, and what integrated marketing means for some of the more important individual channels. Now we're going to wrap things up with a roundtable discussion about how you can make sense of all that in your marketing data, how you can attribute sales back to your marketing dollars and optimize that spending. Now, our distinguished panelists on today's roundtable are Dana Springfield, General Manager of Consumer Direct Marketing for Yankee Candle, a company that has long operated through retail stores, mail order catalogs, the web, and email. And Dana is responsible for figuring out which marketing helps sell which candles. We also have Ruth P. Stevens, an e-marketing strategy consultant who specializes in business-to-business marketing, where she has been named one of the 100 most influential people by Crain's B2B magazine. She is a director of Edmund Optics, Inc., a well-known speaker and author, and she also writes Target Marketing's Ruthless B2B Marketing blog. Then we have Tom Young, Vice President, Client Delivery Services at KBN Group. He leads the Database Marketing and CRM Solutions Group, where he helps many marketers try to answer these attribution and optimization questions. He's also contributed to many of our cover stories, wherever we have questions about big data, about attribution, and about these things, this topic in general. And finally, we have Ari Osor. Ari recently became General Manager at Clear Sailing, where he's responsible for the Marketing Attribution Solutions business. Before that, he was a principal analyst at Forrester Research, where his research focused on helping marketers who are seeking to reach and engage customers across digital channels. Now, between the four of them, we hope to be able to tease apart the tangled ball that is marketing attribution and optimization. However, before we get to the roundtable, let me point out a few quick tips on how to make the most of this session. First, if you have any technical issues, troubleshoot by clicking on the widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the question and answer box. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can utilize all the widgets and bells and whistles on this console. Check the Tips for Attendees widget to learn how you can customize your viewing experience today. If you leave this session at any time or would like to view it again later, don't forget that we'll be archiving the entire show. We'll have the on-demand environment up and running for 3 months beginning Monday, August 20th. Finally, please use the Q&A box to submit your questions to today's panelists. We're going to start off today with four predetermined questions, but after we're through those, we're hoping to be able to answer any questions you might have. So if you have anything to ask, please put it in the Q&A box, and we'll cover as many of your questions as we can. So now, without further ado, let's start the roundtable. And to start off here, let's bring the slide up. Dana, you're a marketer who deals with who deals with attribution across multiple marketing channels. How difficult is it as a marketer to track a sale back to the marketing campaign or campaigns that contributed to it?
Well, it's an interesting question, Thorne. We certainly have our challenges with the multi-channel market, especially on the wholesale side. But when it comes to retail stores and our consumer direct business, it's certainly a challenge to attribute sales to the campaigns, but it's not difficult. And it's important to have the proper staff and the proper partners to help you do that. But you know, we are able to get it done, and it's been proved to be pretty reliable for us. Essentially, we use two approaches to attribution, and which approach we use is determined by the marketing channel. So, for example, what we call our mail tape channels, catalog mailings, direct mail, emails, any promotion that we've got a customer list for that received the promotion. We use the matchback approach for that, and essentially, that's I think fairly well understood. Where you have a holdout group, and you've got a group of folks, the majority that are getting the campaign, and you match back the folks that got the campaign to your database, and you compare their sales with the holdout group who did not get the campaign. You can run P&Ls on that. The tricky part is really trying to figure out the specified period of time that you want to measure the sales in. And so, because of that, these things are a little bit difficult to set up with running business rules. So for us, we essentially look at these as sort of individual analytic projects. Okay. And, you know, we are able to, you know, use a lot of the same approaches for different channels, but occasionally, you know, certain times a year, especially in fourth quarter where we've got a lot of different campaigns going on, we do have to kind of take a step back and do a custom analytic project to figure out, you know, exactly what drove what channel of business. The second approach we use is what we call the new-to-file rate, and we use that for paid search and really any other campaign that where we don't have a mail tape that we can't do a match back with. So in this case, you know, for us, the big program is our paid search program. And, you know, to really understand, you know, what kind of incremental business is coming from that program, you know, we essentially look at a large period of time or even a short period of time, and we look at all the orders that are sourced to that channel. And then we compare that batch of orders to the house file as it existed before the program started or before the period of time when we started measuring the program. And we just measure the percentage of new-to-file customers. And it's not perfect, but it does, you know, allow us to gauge whether a new channel is just churning our existing customers and stealing them from other channels, or is it truly bringing us incremental business. And then we use that new-to-file rate to sort of discount the volume that we get that is sourced to that channel, and then that's what we use to run our P&L.
Okay.
So that's sort of the base set of analytics that we use to determine, you know, the attribution. On top of that, though, you know, once the data is sort of gives us the direction, on the next slide, you know, we like to use customer research just to validate sort of the things we're seeing. What you see here on the slide is this is a survey question that goes out every January to our fourth quarter customers, and we've got data that tells us that our customers take their catalog and they go to the website with it, and you know, we use the survey to help validate what the data is telling us, and you know, what you're seeing here is pretty consistent. We've seen that over the last 8 or 9 years. Responses to the survey like this, so a helpful tool just to help validate the analytics, just to make sure that you know what you're seeing is what your customer feels as well. On the next slide, it's really more about what are the things that we're really learning, and you know, for us. Everybody has challenges with resources, and you know how we use those tools. These are the priorities for Yankee Candle. Obviously, this is driven by print, and the catalogs and direct mail are continue to be our most expensive investment on the marketing side, and so it's their top priority in making sure we understand the impact of. Exactly what those bring in terms of ROI on the marketing side. Paid search is number three, and then alternative channels is our fourth priority in terms of using these tools. What's interesting that's not on this list is email, and email is certainly a big part of our marketing program, but it's still fairly inexpensive, and our approach here is that. Okay, we may be able to determine that an email is only, helping, so much in terms of attribution, but the cost is so low that we probably wouldn't change our strategy. We'd probably still continue to do the emails. It's really, for us, it really comes down to, whether or not to make the big investments in print, and that's why catalogs and direct mail are the priority on this list.
Ultimately,
with the tools and how we use the tools, there are a couple of learnings that I'd like to share with the group, and that's on our last slide. It tells us that, the print channels continue to be our most productive channels in terms of, driving incremental return on investment. But the print channels are more effective when they are combined with the e-commerce channels, the email and the paid search. Our paid search volume is our paid search program is probably our fastest growing program, and it continues to deliver about 50% new to file customers. So, and we're quite happy with that. but we've also learned that, you know, there are times of year when you may not need the paid search, especially during clearance. So those are just some of the key learnings we've had using our attribution methods.
Okay. So so during clearance, you often don't need the paid search because there's enough the clearance is enough motivation for customers to bring new customers in?
Well, what we found is that, you know, generally during in non-clearance periods of times, that's when we're seeing that, you know, we get the new-to-file number coming in out of paid search. During clearance, we see that number. We see a lot of our own customers come through. So then if you essentially run the P&L on paid search during a clearance period of time, you have to, you know, we end up discounting the sales, you know, 75-80% because they're existing customers, and they've already, you know, we've already done the marketing to get them to come. So and it just really doesn't work on the P&L.
Gotcha. All right. Well, you know, that's a great example of how your analytics are revealing the customer's journey, which brings us to the second question, which is going to Ari. And, you know, Ari, based on your research, what does the customer journey typically look like when you're looking at it through advanced attribution?
Yeah, so thanks, Thorin. So I'm Ari Ozier from I'm the GM is at Clear Sailing, as Thorin mentioned. And, you know, so we're an attribution specialist company, work with a lot of different brands on it. And, you know, typically when we look at the customer journey, and we specialize primarily in digital channels, and then we also do pull in some offline information as well into the overall customer profile. You know, a lot of our clients typically come to us because maybe they're looking at using last click, last event as their attribution methodology. And last click is, in some cases, still the standard in the industry where the marketer is looking at the most recent event that led to a conversion and then assigning credit back to that conversion, really 100% of the credit, right? And, you know, what typically, and I just advanced the slide here, but typically under last click, you'll look at the closing event. So here on this slide, it's a paid search link click, which is in the last position. But then you're missing out on all the influencing characteristics and contacts, as well as the contacts that introduced the customer to your brand, to your product, and really kicked off the full customer journey. And so if you're using last click, you're really discrediting all of the other marketing activities and natural behaviors that your customers might have as part of the customer journey. And so if you're looking to allocate your budget and really place your bets on the channels and the tactics that are working best for you, if you're only really using last click, then you're really missing all the stories. So here in this example, you know, in the closing event was this paid search link click, but going now from right back to left, you're missing out on the introductory contacts, such as natural search, and then a retargeting ad that resulted from that. And then going backwards, maybe you have an email contact, a YouTube video, some activity on Facebook, comparison shopping activity. And so all that led back to a conversion, and that's what the user is missing. The marketer is, if they're stuck on last click. And so we did a study last year where we looked at approximately 13 billion impressions across a subset of our clients, and we analyzed the customer journey and the path to conversion, and we found out some pretty interesting things, and some of them are up here on the slide. The first one is that about half of the purchase paths that we analyzed across the data set that we're looking at, about half did involve more than one touch point. So if you're using something like last click, then you're really ignoring about half of the customer journeys and really all those interactions that's happening there in terms of the information to analyze and really make better decisions with. Furthermore, we found that about 3.8 touch points occurred along the average consumer path to a purchase. So almost four touches were happening before someone went and converted. So that can be a display impression, it could be an email, it could be search activity, social media, something happening on mobile. So about four. So if you're using last click, then you're really only looking at that one. You're ignoring the other three there if you're similar to the set that we analyzed for this. And then also we saw that in the multi-touch point purchase path among the people there, among that 50% where there were more than one touch in the purchase path, there actually was an increase in the average order value as well. So folks who were contacted multiple times or were exposed to more marketing contacts along the path typically spent more as well, which was fairly interesting too. So when we kind of look at the customer journey, you know, what we always counsel our clients on is that make sure that you're setting up data and you're getting that consolidated view across all the different touch points. So then you've got a deduped single point of view, a single source of truth really across all your different touch points, and then map out what the customer path looks like. And then on top of it, that's where you can actually lay upon the different attribution models.
All right. Getting a little more into some of the details of attribution. We've talked mostly about consumer at this point. Ruth, can you tell us a little more about how are B2B marketers handling the attribution issue? Obviously, that's a different sales cycle. That's usually a much more complex sale. How much does it come up for them, and how do they deal with it?
Well, it's coming up a lot. And that's, I think, because so many B2B marketers, like all of us, are feeling under pressure to justify their investments. But the interesting thing, I've been listening with great interest to what Dana and Ari had to say, because they're focusing generally on consumer markets and also on digital, primarily digital channels, which are just sort of mouth-wateringly clear in terms of capturing the inbound and outbound touch and storing it in a database for analysis. And, of course, what's more likely in a business-to-business environment is that the digital touches are relatively not minor, but, well, it is maybe a minor component of the series of touches that you're likely to see in the very long sales cycles. Not only is it interesting because these are long sales cycles, but that multi-touch is actually essential to success in business to business. Each media channel is playing a different role typically, and what a marketer is trying to do is build a relationship over time so that we can eventually close the business, usually with a face-to-face or a phone-based sales call. And the other interesting thing that makes this even more crazy in the B2B world is that there are multiple contacts involved. There was some marketing Sherpa data a couple of years ago that suggested that in large enterprises and relatively expensive ticket items, you may see as many as 21 different contacts specifically involved in the buying process for that solution. So that means we as marketers are trying to influence all 21 of them, and they each play a different role in the buying process. And so any attribution really needs to be done at the account level more than the contact level. So that's sort of an interesting angle. So the buying journey, as Ari was talking about, has not only multiple touches through multiple media like trade shows and a lot of event work, as well as print media like direct mail and other inbound and outbound communications that supplement and actually are really more the foundation to go along with digital. So what we end up with is actually it's more traditional in B2B. I loved how Ari was making the case for why last click is not adequate. Well, in business to business, it's less likely to be last click, which is getting the false credit. And it's more likely the first click, and it's not really the first click, it's really more the first touch, that most of the analysis is done on what was the original contact source for kicking off this relationship. Did it come in through email or direct mail, or was it at a trade show, for example? And those, it's that media channel that's more likely to get the credit, if anything. But the beauty, and I'll just wrap this up because I could go on and on about this, but the beauty is that business-to-business marketers are generally well aware that in a multi-channel, multi-contact communications environment, we're really accustomed to the idea of the agonies of attribution. And while we do try to work it, and with the digital channels that the previous speakers have mentioned, we do have a prayer, but generally we're more likely to be tracking an inbound inquiry to a qualified lead, and then how that lead is disposed of. Either one hopes it's been sold, or it's been put into a nurturing process or otherwise managed. And best practices following B2B marketer today is going to have a closed-loop lead management system, which will have a lot of flaws, naturally, but sort of becomes our attribution proxy, in effect. And making decisions about, well, should we be spending more on this media channel versus that media channel, which is really what Dana's excellent analyses allows Yankee Candle to do, you know, making investment decisions, we end up pretty much sacrificing that question. And unless we can really set up a test and control groups, which is well nigh impossible in B2B, we usually think of the relationship being nurtured over time, and always trying to come up with better ways to assess that. Now, there are a couple of intrepid B2B marketers who are actually doing sophisticated modeling to try to analyze back from the sale which series of touches, which actual buying journey was the most effective, the most cost-effective, the most likely to convert, the one that converted the fastest, for example, you know, price and speed being two really critical issues. But those are very rare birds, and, you know, and by the way, in business to business, most people who are doing cool stuff like that don't really want to talk about it for a competitive reason. So it's sort of hard to find them in the first place. So with that, Thorin, I'll hand the mic back to you.
Well, thank you. That's it really paints the picture of two very different cycles going on there between B2B and B2C, which brings us to Tom's question. And Tom, I'm not sure if you can answer this question in a way that covers both of those, but you know, what foundation do marketers need to have in place in order to attribute their sales to optimize their marketing spend? How can they? What do they need to have there to make that happen?
Okay, what a straight man, I'll tell you. You just set me up perfectly. But I think that what we've heard today is that for any of these brands to be successful, everybody is in this multi-channel space, and you got to meet the consumer where they live with consistent, relevant messaging, whether it's in the mail, on the web, on the phone, in the store, at an event, while delivering service, while fielding a complaint, and many other ways that consumers, whether they be consuming for a business activity or consuming for a personal activity, you know, these are the places they go and the activities that the consumers are initiating. And we're not so much in the business anymore of selling to the to the consumer, the consumer is in the business now of buying from the brand. And so it really does create this big challenge for a brand into how to sort through what is a very confusing and messy topic, because as Ari was showing, you have to make a lot of touches to oftentimes bring a consumer to a point of pulling the trigger. And in the B2B world, you can see that process might be very long indeed, over 6-12 months for a big purchase. So that creates this major challenge in where do we attribute that? And on the one hand, I'll say I've sort of given up having that argument about what technique is better or not, and taken a little bit different approach. But underlying, whether it's business to consumer or business to business, I think the underlying aspects of this are the same, and it starts with a highly disciplined and coordinated marketing planning process and a framework for measurement. You can't do any of this without the data. You know, Ari said it, he said it really well. You got to bring all of this data back together from these places where consumers are engaging with a brand, resolve the identity. Now you can actually start having a discussion about what that data means. So it takes a very disciplined process in marketing. It starts upstream in the campaign and marketing process, with every time a group within a brand wants to place a piece of media or drive a campaign, there should be associated with that a marketing and measurement plan. And that plan should describe the specifics of how those tactics are going to be measured, how those responses are going to be captured, what do we have to have at the call to action point or the touch point, what data can we get from that. And so that plan needs to be very specific, and we need to close any gaps on that measurement plan so that when that piece of media goes into market or when that spend is made for a campaign, we know we're going to get the data back so we can have this great argument about how to attribute it. And so that is a really fundamental piece to this discussion. And once we have that kind of process that gets all of those pieces of media measured, whether it be a direct mail piece or a display ad, and brings that data together, then we can start having discussions about who gets credit. And this is where I would say you can spend a whole lot of time arguing about what is the best way to credit an activity. And I've come around to a point of view that says, look, this is not simple. There is no silver bullet answer that says, here is the holy grail of attribution. This is your answer. I just don't think that exists. I think what you have to do is find a way to look at situations from different perspectives. Some of them are a lot easier than others. You know, when it used to be a direct mail world and we could control a barcode on the mail and we could read that barcode in when they sent us back a thing, we could make a very explicit connection between the offer and the response. And then, you know, as Dana was talking about earlier, when we have responses that don't have that kind of explicit coding on it, now we have to make some inference about that. But I see these as more methods that we use, and you might use several of these together to get a picture of what's really happening. But to me, these are all things that are measuring a tactic. It's a very different question now to how are we going to allocate our spend. And what we encourage people to do is when you want to look across your enterprise and across the brand and say, well, how much money should we put into TV and in what market, and how much money should be put into branding activity, and how much money should be put into display advertising and search, that's a very strategic discussion. And for that, we tend to go down the path of a media mix model where we can not have to rely so heavily on tactical attribution, but we're trying to figure out the influence of the channels or the overall marketing spend on sales. And so that's a different method, And it's not a single method, because even after we do that and we make an allocation, you kind of got to go back over to the other side of the equation and now say, how are we going to measure some of these tactics? Because if we decide to put money into search, it's important to understand, well, did we get any response off that search? So we've gone down the path of saying we have to use many attribution methods together and bring some smart people, and we're lucky, and many brands are lucky. You've got some pretty smart analysts out there who can then take that and make some good sense out of it to help us develop a better approach.
All right. So in terms of that framework, and that's something I think that I'd like to kind of get all of your input on, is what Tom's laying out here a strategy that you all would embrace? So what are the keys that marketers, what are the keys to this framework to making this work effectively?
Well, you have to have visibility into the touches themselves. Like Tom made the important point about data capture. But I'm really not as familiar with mixed modeling as I'd like to be, but as I understand it, the tough thing is that it infers a causal connection between a final outcome like a sale and an upstream touch, right? Do I have that right, Tom?
Yes, it takes an entire set of touches.
Yeah.
That results in a sale, and through statistical methods, derives the influence that the touch had on the sale, and that helps you to determine how to weight that kind of touch or that whole set of tactics within the entire marketing budget.
Right.
So it's very high level. It only gives you that directional ability. It says, okay, maybe we ought to take some of our money from TV and put it into paid search.
Mm-hmm.
And you still have the challenge now of what paid search, and that becomes tactical.
Yeah.
Okay, and Dana, how does that compare to what you're doing at Yankee Candle?
Well, I think it's right in line with our approach. I mean, and there's a couple of points there that dovetail perfectly with our strategy. One, it is you do have to have as much data as you can get your hands on, but that's just the foundation. You know, the second piece is it's what Tom said. There's a sort of an art to this, and that's the sort of you've got to make some of those calls. You've got to decide. Is it going to be, are you spending put in TV or are you going to put it in search? And if you are going to allocate 20% of your TV budget to search, you do have to spend the time and figure out how you're going to measure if that was effective or not. But that is exactly our approach at Yankee Candle. I mean, any time, we're introduced to a potential new channel of volume, that's the first question we ask is, okay, how are we going to measure it? How are we going to know, is it bringing us incremental business? Especially, our brand is fairly well known across the land, and it's pretty difficult for us to find a market where we don't already have a presence of some kind, and if I'm in some marketing channel that's already productive. So we have to lay out that strategy. Now that said, there's still optimizing those channels, and there's room there for improvement in terms of trying to figure out which channel is the more cost effective approach to driving the volume, and that's where the art comes into this.
But I thought that Dana, you were using test groups and control groups to try to get at that those answers.
Yep, we are, and that's the foundation. So the question is, okay, good. So we nailed down, the true incrementality of our direct mail. But okay, now, what about Facebook advertising? Okay, so that's all right. Well, that's what Ari talked about. That's just another. That's one of the maybe six or seven touches that our customers are. Getting as on the road to the purchase, but that's do you add in that seventh component. Now, you know, we before we decide to try the Facebook advertising, you know, we've got to lay out a plan there, and it may be, you know, it may be incremental, but it you know, it also could cannibalize banner advertising on other sites. So, you know, that's, you know, we have the data to understand the foundation. Again, the print. It's just when we start to get into some of the electronic channels, you do have to make some you got to make some high level calls there.
It seems like the volume, or maybe not, the size of the universe of prospects seems to make a difference here. Whereas, you know, you're dealing with a huge universe of potential customers, and the media mix. You know, when Tom's talking about using the data, using statistics to infer how the what the media mix is you should be using, you know, those apply best when you're dealing with a large universe. Whereas what Ruth was talking about before. I would think B2B marketers in general, they're dealing with a smaller universe then. I mean, the statistics may not apply to their customers, right?
Well, it is actually not the universe size that's the issue for business to business. It's the lack of data because, we've discussed already, there are certain touches that are simply not captured, or if they're captured, it's a weak link. Even with a relatively small data set, I've seen some excellent modeling done in business to business to get at this weighting factor that Tom was talking about. So that's not the issue. It's really more the complexity of the very long sales cycles and the number of parties involved. But at the account level, the weighting can actually be done in a pretty reasonable manner, interestingly.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And we haven't heard about we haven't heard from Ari yet on this topic, and Ari. So, you know, what are some of the different methodologies and models? How are they different?
Yeah, sure. So, we walked through before last click, right, in terms of really what that looks like. So it's giving credit to what evolved there. And then, Ruth also touched upon, first click as well, so the introducing contact. And so there's really, a various spectrum, right? And it's based on a level of sophistication, but then really also based on the amount of data that's available. And so we tend to focus more on the digital side of things, where you can collect information at the user level, the cookie level, tie it back to an anonymous user, and then really recreate the customer journey, and then apply models on top of it. And so have a slide up here which kind of lays out the different attribution models. And so under last click or last ad, you can see here that the contact in the final position receives 100% of the credit, and that's the version of attribution that kind of kicked things off and it's really sort of lumbered along in the marketplace, even though there are a few people that stand behind it at this point. And then there's different rules-based models, right? So there's even weighted models where you're taking all the contacts and you're saying let's just divvy up credit evenly across all the different contacts, which is probably the most democratic model out there. And then there's other rules-based ones that might assign value based on the position in the path. So you may say, okay, let's give half of the credit to the introducing contact, and then 25% for the one in position 2, 15% for the one in position 3, and then 10% for the closing one, and you can apply that basic heuristic across the different contacts and the data that you've aggregated. And then there's more of the algorithmic approach, which is the final one here. And in that one, that's really similar to what Tom was discussing before. It's really where you let using using stats, you're essentially letting the data tell you what the weights should be, and the data is assigning the weights. In terms of subjectivity, that one tends to be the lowest one, where you're not really using intuition or gut or basic business rules to do it. You're saying, let's apply math to it. On the flip side, it definitely requires your organization, if you're a marketer, to become comfortable with the math that's being used there, and to poke holes in the methodology and ask really tough questions from a analytics and stats standpoint. If your organization has that in its DNA in terms of using advanced methodologies, then it may be easier to migrate over to an algorithmic approach, which can be a little bit less subjective. But at the same time, there may be folks who say, okay, let's start off with maybe more of an even-based, rules-based model, and then migrate to an algorithmic one over time. That tends to be the broader spectrum. We've been seeing more new clients that we've been onboarding are actually gravitating to starting with the algorithmic ones sooner than what we've seen in the past, which is an interesting development.
Please go ahead.
I was just going to say, you did a really good job there, Ari, of kind of laying out the universe of possibilities. And again, one of the points I was trying to make was that it's a complex topic, and you're better off spending your effort and time looking at many of these methods together to try to gain the best insight you can to what's going on. And we see in a lot of organizations there's a lot of effort spent arguing about who gets the credit, and that's really not what you want at the end of the day. It's really how do we take our entire marketing spend and get the most sales we can get. And there's some, in a lot of organizations, there's some institutional impediments to that we're trying to knock those down with some of these attribution methods. And so I would just say to you, it's not one way. There's several ways to look at this, and you probably should look at several ways as you try to sort through what's really happening in your ecosystem. And nothing beats a good test strategy.
The discussion of the different models, I think, brings up a really fundamental question here, which is, how can you tell whether or not the attribution system you're using is working, or if you need to do something different? How can you evaluate it? I'll throw that out there to anyone.
Well, I guess I would put it like this. You have a certain marketing spend. Your marketing spend is split between a certain number of channels and tactics, and that ecosystem together creates a certain amount of sale. Now, if you change something in that mix and your sales go up, that's a really good thing, but you still might not know exactly why that happened. But if you change the mix and the sales go up, you're moving in the right direction. Now, does that have something to do with attribution? Yeah, potentially, but it had more to do with you picked the right channel which to move your money into.
Right,
and it also makes the case for test and control, which is really the ultimate arbiter of all of this.
Right, certainly. I mean, that's a big part of, for Yankee understanding through, up and down markets, truly what the impact of the marketing is, because we have made changes to the marketing program, and, they were good changes, but the overall, the economy was, soft in the period, and so the sales went down versus prior year. But if you look at the test and the control groups, you'll see that the marketing was just as effective as it was a year ago. It was just effective on a lower base.
Mm-hmm.
So the spend was justified, but you still have to explain to the CEO why the overall sales are down. But at least you can focus the efforts more on environmental concerns and other broader issues. But because if the environment's down, then the control goes down as well.
Okay.
We often see a term called assist, like in a hockey game, to give credit to the various touches, because it's awfully hard to know which one had which impact on the buying process. So, but I like that term assist because it gives a, you know, some a positive spin on all of these efforts that people are squabbling about.
Now, do they do anything to adjust the amount of assist that they that's applied to one of the touches, or?
Well, again, that's the weighting system that that Ari was talking about. Yeah.
All right. That's about all we have time for today. So I want to thank our panelists. Thank you all very much. A lot of interesting insights we went over here. On behalf of Target Marketing and Printing Impression Magazines, I want to thank everyone who attended today, both this session and for the whole show. Thank you for coming out. If you're interested in discussing anything you heard during this presentation, I believe that the Networking Lounge will still be open for a little while longer. You can still also visit the info booth and fill out our show survey to let us know how the experience was today. Lastly, don't forget to take a look at our agenda, both to see what on-demand sessions may still be running and also to see what you might want to come back and check out on-demand. Again, thank everyone very much for attending. Have a great night. And I hope you learned something over the day. Thank you.